All right. This is the Back to Birding podcast, and that was a much-needed energy drink being cracked open by my co-host.
Luke Thompson. This is Patrick recommended it to me. It's a rain, storm, clean energy, kiwi blend.
Not sponsored, but I do find them amazing.
Yeah, so here's my first ever taste of one. Cheers. Whoa. It's good. It's very artificial flavored.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, Luke, you mentioned on our walk up here that you had done some birding recently. So let's just kick it off by talking about that here.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have listened to recent episodes, you would know that I am back in the States briefly because of rabies. There's a bat in my room. Very small chance I got like bit or something, but you wouldn't be able to tell, and I don't want to, you know, die of rabies. So got rushed back to the States, and so on I guess my second or third day back, I birded with Brian Bullard. We went into Squatchy Valley.
How's he doing?
He's doing good. We're still working at a wine shop.
Cool. That fits.
He's a really nice guy. So yeah, it was cool to get out with him. It's been a while. And we got Dick Sissel, which was a state bird for him.
Wow. Yeah, living in Chattanooga, that'll do it to you.
yep, that'll do it. It was nice. Easy, really, really easy bird. Got fantastic looks at it. Made me want to have a camera, but my camera's currently in Panama.
Yeah.
and then, kind of frustratingly, I heard a very, very distant grasshopper sparrow that he couldn't hear. It was very sporadic and distant, and grasshopper sparrows are very
I don't have that for the year yet.
Yeah, this is the first one in Sequatchie County this year, even though people have been birding the spot for the Dick Sissels.
Really?
I think it's just because it's way out in that field, and it's that
hard to hear.
And I have the advantage of having young ears, so
and very knowledgeable ears.
I don't know. Sometimes knowledgeable ears, I guess. And then that was really nice to get that Dick Sissel. It felt amazing after being in Panama. It's like 70 degrees, not humid. It was fantastic.
It wasn't humid?
Didn't feel humid. You got to, like, I've been in Panama in the wet season. Yeah. Like,
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And then we went up to a road and we pulled off, and there's a tractor mowing, right?
You're hoping for black rail.
The thought didn't cross my mind.
Oh, really?
but maybe it should have. But there were like swarms, like probably 75 plus swallows following the tractor, picking off insects that were flying out, which is really cool.
That is cool.
And the reason we were at that road was scissor-tailed flycatchers are there, which is probably, I don't know. It's one of my favorite birds. Like, I just came back from seeing toucans, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. I probably just am used to toucans at this point, but.
Do fork-tailed flycatchers get that far south where you are?
Yeah. I saw fork-tailed flycatchers.
I thought so.
Scissor-tailed flycatcher is a much better bird than a fork-tailed flycatcher.
Why do you say that?
Scissor-tailed flycatcher, fork-tailed flycatcher is like an eastern kingbird that's kind of, its patterning is less crisp. It's like a little less good of a patterning, right? And it's just got a long tail. Scissor-tailed flycatcher, you take away the long tail, it's still a fantastic bird.
It's still beautiful.
Because it's like got like that snowy white, and then they got the salmon wash underneath, and when they fly, they have
those armpits that are like shoulders that are just stunning.
Yeah, bright, like orange salmon, whatever that color is.
Yeah.
Pinkish.
A little sunset.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then they have that long black and white tail. It's really cool. So, we saw them, and we were watching them. And they were
one nest there, or are there multiple pairs?
It was just one pair that we were watching. And so we were watching them. They were also going into the field after bugs scared up by the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they flew into a nest, and we watched them feed young for like 10 or 15 minutes, which was really cool. A really cool experience. Much needed after some you know, kind of rough days.
Yeah, some casual birding.
Yeah, good old casual birding, without this like added layer of like this is scouting, you know, in Panama. So that was it was nice.
No professional aspect of it.
Yeah, it was fun. So.
Sounds like a good time. Well, I don't know, the title of this episode might hint at it, but this is part two of the last one because we got kicked out of the studio due to poor time management. And so I want to cover the rest of my Utah trip, so I guess we can jump into that now. Yeah, we'll just kind of fill you in. This was my first trip out west ever. It's actually the furthest north I've ever been to, so that's kind of crazy. But
you haven't been anywhere.
Nope. If you look on my eBird, well, now it looks a lot different, but it used to just be like the literal southeast and then Hawaii.
Have you ever been international?
I went to Honduras in 2019 for 10 days, but I didn't have...
And you got the best mot-mot.
Yeah, I got lessons and turquoise browed within feet of me, so that was pretty sick.
Turquoise browed is the best mot-mot.
Yeah. I felt like an old-timey birder. I had to sketch everything I saw and then look back in the books later because I didn't bring any gear. It was just eyes. Anyways, so I
man, that's hard.
Yeah, I only had like 20-ish species in 10 days, so that was kind of
pain.
Yeah, that was tough. Anyways, so yeah, this was a really cool trip to go on, and I was really stoked. It was with our good friends Lizzie and John Diener, and a doctoral student named Hannah Wright, and a fantastic field biologist named Rebecca LeBleu. And so we covered like the first weekend in the last episode, and I got to
sharp-tailed grouse is what we last
sharp-tailed grouse, and got a good look at dusky grouse. I had a few lifers mixed in. Mm-hmm. First county record that I found of a vermilion flycatcher, which was very promptly followed up by Luke's first county record of a vermilion flycatcher in Hamilton County.
Much better first county record.
Okay, yeah, he's still on that, still riding that high.
But oh, yeah. I will be for the rest of my life.
Oh, man. This has not much to do with it, but speaking of potential first county records, as some of our listeners may know, saw-whet owls are something that we like to talk about and mm-hmm. like to try for.
And then we forgot to try for them later in the season.
Yeah, we did. But there's quite a few southeastern states that we kind of know have them, but people just haven't found them yet. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to my buddy that lives out in Idaho, or he used to live out in Idaho and has a bunch of connections out there, Austin Young. And he said that the northwestern plains out near Idaho are having an extraordinary vole year. And the saw-whet owls and the long-eared owls and I think the barn owls are just having like crazy numbers of juveniles and just like having broods after broods. So it's going to be potentially a fantastic fall and winter for raptors. So
hell yeah.
Yeah, at least that's what my little intuitive thoughts pointed me towards. But like if we're having these Swainson's hawks that are just like doubling their typical brood sizes, then surely we're gonna have a bunch of vagrant juveniles. So
I'll be here this fall, so you want a hawk watch?
Yeah, heck yeah, let's do it. Yeah, I mean, in all winter typically we get raptors showing up in weird places. So
I will not be here this winter, unfortunately. So
well, I probably will, so I'll take that from you. But
yeah, his Hamilton County list will get higher than my.
I don't know, dude. You got some crazy birds in this county.
I have, like a young child. 270.
That's about as many as I have in the state so far. So
268.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'm at 212.
Oh,
In the county. So yeah. Anyways, let's get into some of this Utah birding. So that first weekend, we got to kind of just do some recreational birding around northern Utah up into Idaho. And then whenever the actual work week started, we went into pinyon jay research. So that was super exciting. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I went out there, and they were just super helpful with teaching me how to do some things here and there that I had not been taught yet. And I definitely had some experience with target netting species and like just banding in general, but they especially when you're doing one species like that, it's and it's a corvid, it's like you gotta really be smart with your actions because those things will outsmart you.
And the deaners are really good at what they do.
They are.
I got to see them on one project that I worked on with them for a bit. I got to see them in action and their techniques compared with the techniques of two other field biologists, and it was pretty clear that their techniques were the best, which was pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, they have many, many, many years of experience, and it's definitely served them well. But I think that first day we just went down and hopped around southeastern Utah, so that's kind of between Price and Moab, if y'all are familiar with the area. Pretty much all sagebrush and pinyon juniper, a very unique habitat, and I was super stoked to actually get to
see it,
find myself out there.
I guess this is a tangent, but like what was it like for you seeing such different landscapes after having, you know, experienced basically the southeast?
It was breathtaking. I told Lizzie and John multiple times that I was just running out of adjectives to describe what I was seeing. It was just like, I was like, oh, that's gorgeous, oh, that's beautiful, oh my gosh, that's the prettiest thing I've ever seen. What the heck. It's like I at some point you just get fatigued from saying it's beautiful so much, but it really was just the colors and the magnitude of the landscape was just incredible. It's something that I hope every person gets to see at some point in their life, a landscape like that.
And that's your first time in sort of, did you get into like a real desert environment?
Yeah.
That's your first time?
Yeah, first time in desert, first time in the Rockies.
So this is your first time seeing real mountains.
Yeah. I mean, those things were different level for sure. I mean, obviously I've like watched every nature documentary possible, but it's seeing them in person and just like
it's completely different.
Yeah, I don't know, that was definitely one of the biggest takeaways of the whole trip, was just seeing how much variety Utah itself holds in landscape. Because if you're up around Salt Lake City, it's just these scenic mountain ranges and pretty lush green. And then you get further south, and it's just deserts and canyon lands, and just completely different. But
yeah,
it was pretty great to spend the trip going up and down the state and seeing the contrast there. Because in my trip report, you can kind of see how much ground we actually covered, and it was quite a lot. But so I guess I forgot to mention over the weekend we went to Bear River National Wildlife Refuge and got to see some pretty incredible birds. The very classic Western grebe courting.
Oh, you got to see that?
Got to see it.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was.
So you got to see like the running?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. Where they, for those of you that don't know, it's quite an incredible phenomena that you can easily watch on YouTube, but these grebes, Clarks and Western, are just very large grebes, at least in comparison to some the other ones across the across North America. And to see them actually do their thing and kind of go nuts trying to hang out with each other, it's
Yeah,
it's a pretty wonderful thing to experience, and I've been watching it on nature documentaries for my entire life. So
I've
it's
never
like,
seen it.
Yeah. But it's definitely an iconic thing in the birding world.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty incredible to see.
Did you get both Western and Clarks?
Yep. And that was, there's my Clarks there. I actually had Western for Tennessee, but they were associating together just right with each other. There was no species separation geographically at all. Like all of them in the exact same pond in this massive wildlife refuge. And I know you're about to say something about whether they're a real species or not.
I feel like I've heard that there's a lot of hybridization there.
There sure is.
And
yeah.
that really just, that just, my confidence just dips.
Yeah.
Hearing that too.
Yeah. So, okay. I have a crazy story to lead with.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So Lizzie got her and I a little opportunity to go help the Utah DNR with another project that they were doing. She asked if we could, and
I've heard this from Lizzie. She sent me pictures. I know what you're about to say.
Yeah. Well, she actually had a very different experience than I did the very same night. So we got to go do greater sage grouse field work, and that was something that I was not expecting, but something that I will never forget.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know how to accurately relive this scenario, but
just be poetic, you know?
Yeah. So Lizzie and I, neither one really knew what we were getting into.
Of course.
Genuinely. But we were just told to meet these two other guys at like 3 a.m. at the DNR station. And so we got up at 2:30, barely conscious. We got over there and they drove us up this mountain to a spot where they knew there have been leks prior, but the mountain had been frozen until the prior week. So they couldn't actually get up there until until this week that we were there. So they're like, this is a great spot. We really want to go check and see if we can catch some of these birds and tag them. So we get up there and they just kind of do a little 5-minute demonstration. They hand us these 10, 12 foot poles with a 2 foot in diameter round net on the end. So you have like essentially like a 12 to 15 foot pole, a metal pole you're carrying around, and the person, you line up directly behind a partner. So there were, Lizzie was with the guy and I was with the guy, and I would line up, I'll just do it from my perspective. So I lined up behind this guy and had my net in hand, and he had a spotlight in one hand because it's 3 a.m. mm-hmm. and strapped to his chest was a massive speaker. And we didn't ask questions prior. We didn't have time to ask questions. We didn't know what we were getting into. And he doesn't play any music in the little 5-minute demonstration, but he's like, yeah, I'll be playing music. I'll have the spotlight on him. We'll get up close to him, and you'll run out behind me and grab him. And then we went. So I was like, that was all.
He's playing music?
Yeah, that was all I got.
What music was he playing?
Well, that's where it gets funny. So, so okay, to kind of get you in this, in my shoes here, it was like 28 degrees probably. Mm-hmm. We're in as many clothes as we could put on because it's very, very cold. There's frost on absolutely everything. Like our hands are numb already. It's quite an experience already.
Right.
So
amazing.
We hike out into this sagebrush, and the guy that I'm following starts blasting Master of Puppets.
There's no way.
And for those of you that don't know, yeah, that is a Metallica song that will blow your head off.
Why?
There's actually a reason. So in the literature, whenever you're trying to catch these chicken species, and it actually works for a lot of other species like shorebirds and other families, but it's a thing called dazzling, and it's pretty well used, but you use a very bright light and kind of slightly shake it once you find a bird, and it confuses them enough, and then in the literature it says to use white noise to cover your footsteps because they can feel the vibrations, they can hear them, and that'll kind of be enough to get them to flush. But the people that we were with decided that white noise was too infuriating to listen to for hours on end, so they just decided to do some trial and error and see what type of music genres would work to catch these birds. And they found that old country and like dad rock metal was the two best things. And they said it's because they don't have a very consistent beat. It's kind of like sporadic almost. And yeah, so it's, I was not ready for that. I immediately just started like busting out laughing, but I didn't have time to even process because we're like half, you know, whenever people kind of hike too fast for it to be comfortable and you're like kind of almost jogging and it's like, yeah, that's how fast we're going. So I'm doing that and I can barely see. I'm like trying to follow and they're just, and I was like, whoa, oh my gosh. So it's just way too much to take in at once. And we're just trying to find these birds. So at lek sites, for those that don't know, the males and the females will both roost nearby so that they don't have to fly in from miles away to lek before sunrise and then fly away again. So they're all there all night pretty much. And so what we were trying to do was find females that we could put these geolocating tags on, and then send them off on their way to monitor population sizes. And so Lizzie ended up catching a big male, which is just beautiful to see in hand. And with the males, we were taking blood samples and feathers. And then I ended up catching a female. So that was pretty insane, but it was just like quite an experience. And just you get up behind them and start walking faster, and then you just run out and jump pretty much. And pin it against the ground.
You need
with
a GoPro.
Net. Yeah, I know, dude. That the YouTube video would have been insane if I had a GoPro on.
You should be a bird influencer, right? Yeah. Where you just follow.
I think we kind of are with the podcast, but yeah. So that was kind of ridiculous, and the whole process ended right before sunrise because we didn't want to interrupt the lekking process. And so whenever we finished up, it was, I don't know, 5:30-ish and maybe 6. But we just went out to different lekking spots so that we could actually watch from afar these greater sage grouses doing their thing.
I feel like the plural of grouse should be grice.
Grice or grease or these greater sage grease. Yeah, I guess pretty good. Greater sage gry, maybe.
Grice? I feel like because mouse, mice, grouse, grice.
Moose, meese.
Moose isn't just moose.
Greater sage moose.
I want to see one of those. Just a moose with like the air sacs, like a greater sage.
Oh my gosh. My brain can't even compute that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, greater sage grouse is the males at least, are an exceptionally large chicken spa. And what I didn't know is that they're almost like as big as some small wild turkeys.
So oh my God.
It's kind of crazy.
I've seen Gunnison sage grouse, but not greater.
Yeah, so I mean, you've seen Gunnison? That's like the freaking crazy hard one to find.
I met a random old man in the middle of Colorado when we were looking for him. He was like, oh yeah, I just bought a property with a lek right outside the house. And I have his number still, by the way.
Really?
He's in my contacts as Sage Grouse Roy.
$5 for that number. per listener.
Yeah. So I have a spot on private land with a lek of Gunnison sage grouse.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know actually how hard they are to find. But
the publicly available lek is like a mile away.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if there were any publicly ones. Obviously, it wasn't out that way, but Gunnison sage grouse was recently split from greater sage grouse, and they have a super tiny range in Colorado. But greater sage grouse is a crazy-looking bird. When the males are displaying, they slap these glands around and just make ridiculous
sounds. Let's link a
YouTube video. It's for those of you that might be familiar with the American bittern, like crazy sound that they do, that really guttural throat. Yeah, it's don't try that at home, kids. But it's a yeah, it's something you can hear from quite a distance, and it's just it's ridiculous to listen to. I mean, all of the chickens displaying are really incredible to witness, but this one especially is just wild because they're huge. They've got this black and white contrasting. Their tail is like fanned and spiky.
And then they got these yellow air sacs?
I don't know. I feel like they're potentially boobs.
I feel like, see, that's like, that's what they look like. Yeah. We probably shouldn't say that on the podcast, though.
I feel like there's a chance.
they have these.
I won't say I know for sure.
They have these yellow. I think they're air sacs. Yes, that's.
I mean, they are definitely air sacs. I just don't know what they're actually called.
Yeah, what are they?
I should know that.
Yeah,
they're probably like some type of gland that they're just slapping about. But, anyways, it was really incredible to get to listen to and like. Being out there in the sagebrush and just hearing it echo over the fields is just really something I'll never forget. But
never beat.
Yep. and then while we were at that one lek that we got the best views at, I had my first green-tailed towhee pop up out of a bush. And
best towhee in the States.
I agree. It is just, I mean, especially for just being a sparrow, it's like, it's such an incredible...
Okay, shut up. Don't just say just being is a sparrow. I love sparrows. Yeah. They're ugly and brown and beautiful.
Yeah, but this one's none of those except beautiful. It is just green and gray and then bright, rufousy red. It's like, come on. This guy's got something going
Lincoln
on.
Lincoln sparrows look better.
I do love me a Lincoln sparrow, but that's up for debate.
I mean, have you ever seen just some crisp brown and buff, like on a Lincoln sparrow? It's great.
I've seen crisp brown and buff on every other sparrow as well.
But the Lincoln sparrow is especially crisp. Like
it is, actually.
A song sparrow is kind of ugly. A Lincoln sparrow?
A Lincoln sparrow is like a song sparrow that just got its hair cut.
Lincoln sparrow is like American. A song sparrow is French, right?
Because that might not please our French listeners if we have any, or any of our listeners with any French heritage.
I also have been texting someone who's currently in France recently, who also
you should ask them if they think that's accurate or not.
It's a non-birder.
Yeah, I don't think it would translate. But
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, she'd be like, "What are you talking about?" I think she almost got detained by the French authorities, too.
Mm.
So,
I won't ask.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, I don't know how we circle that back, but...
So did you get detained by the authorities in Utah? You certainly detained some chickens.
We did. We detained quite a few birds over my time there, but... Goodness, you okay? All right, anyways, and then just also while we were at the lake, had a pretty incredible views of mountain bluebird, which I think...
Objectively the best bluebird.
I that's exactly what I was about to say. I think, the eastern bluebirds have a very, very near place to my heart, just growing up with them. But man, those mountain bluebirds are just something else. It's just really an incredible bird to get to see.
I have glory. A mountain bluebird memory. I was hiking in the Canadian Rockies. Mm. I had just gotten my life a gray-crowned rosy finch, and we were like sort of, I can't remember if we were like just above the tree line or if we were like in a meadow that was sort of in the flirting with the tree line. I think that's sort of what it was. And like these massive, incredible snow-capped mountains surrounding us. Mm. And then a mountain bluebird flew by. It's great. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Also seen them in New Mexico.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything better than a photo of a mountain bluebird in the snow. I think that's about as good as it gets.
Have you seen a Lincoln sparrow, though?
Oh, my God. I'll keep that pause in there. That was too good. Oh, goodness. Okay. But, yeah, so whenever we would get pinion jays on these little spots, so we had these feeders set up and down the eastern half of Utah, and pinion jays are a flocking species, so now they... Everything they do is communal. And so whenever you actually try and target them or study them, you just end up having to study the flock and work with the flock. So we had these feeders set up with cages at the bottom, and the feeders dispersed these seeds periodically. And so anything in the area could come in and out of the cages freely. So... Because these birds are corvids, meaning they're stupid smart, if we one day just put cages out and the cages hadn't been there prior, then they would recognize that something was wrong and they wouldn't cooperate with our plans. But
that is never something I've had to work with in my limited field work.
Yeah. But so thankful for the smart brains behind the project thinking about those aspects. And the birds feeding on the seed, these pinion jay flocks come into these feeders. They would go in and out of the cages, and whenever we were ready to actually go out to one of those feeders and ban them, put geolocating tags on them, and potentially draw blood, it just made it really simple. So it was really great, and I got to get some really incredible views of pinion jays, get some good lighting on them. It was just absolutely phenomenal to see those blue and gray tones pop. Just absolutely stunning birds with a lovely call. And just
I remember the first time I saw pinion jays, I was in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. We were hiking in this like high desert, or it may not even technically be desert, whatever. Extremely dry, desert-looking environment, and just coming down from this plateau. Ghost Ranch, New Mexico is where we're at. And I heard this call, and I was like, what is that? And then I saw one fly over.
Yeah.
And then, like, 50 flew over. And it was incredible. Oh, wow. And got fantastic views.
That's awesome.
I started freaking out. It was great.
Yeah. You do definitely hear these birds before you see them, typically.
Yeah.
And they're a relatively small jay.
Yeah.
But you know, still jay size. I think they look a lot like thrushes in flight, and that might be only me. But I watching them fly consistently, it looked like
been 2 years.
It's a super flappy bird, and I don't know, just definitely did not look like other jays in flight.
No, the shape of a pinion jay is closer to like a nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see a nutcracker on this trip?
I did. Yeah, I'll get into that for sure. But
but they're interesting jays.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a unique guy.
Unique little blue fella.
Yeah, pinion jays are the only species in their genus, so that's a pretty unique jay species. Really great bird to get to work with.
Yeah,
in hand like that.
They're very, very cool birds. Really like them. Definitely. Beautiful.
Yeah. But so whenever our work days would finish, we would typically try and just hit a spot with a different variety of birds than what we were seeing in these sage and pinyon juniper stands. So at one point we went up to a mountain reservoir where Lizzie had seen some reports of some good birds that we were after, and just kind of went to see what we could find. And on the way up there had canyon wren, which up to that point we had missed out on.
Their song somehow is so cool.
Yeah, it's one of the most incredible songs of any bird I've heard.
Wrens are amazing birds.
Ridiculous, yeah. Yeah, and
shout out David Hawley with that one. his life goal is to see every single wren. So, every single wren.
Oh my gosh. I don't even know if other, like, if other hemispheres have them, but
There's Eurasian wren is the only one.
Okay.
And obviously, they're like, actually, I think most of the wren diversity is Central South America.
Okay.
I think.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we had some really fantastic birds up there. Ran into a flock of Townsend solitaires, which.
Fantastic bird, too.
Yeah. It's just one of the best things ever. I love those guys now. And, I think we had 8 or 9 in that little flock, and just all around us, it was snowing on this mountaintop. Seeing that a little mockingbird-esque bluebird little thing, it was just such a funny combo with the structure and plumage, but just really a gorgeous, gorgeous bird.
They have just nice songs, too,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, they do. And they're just crazy cute. Like, you just,
yeah,
you can't say anything other than
it's
they're
like
cute.
Like Patrick with his mustache.
We're driving back down the this mountain road, and I had the windows down, and Lizzie heard, thankfully, because I did not catch up on it. She heard the little insect-like trill of a broad-tailed hummingbird. And that was one that we were definitely expecting, but we had not seen one up to that point. So it was really exciting to hear that guy at all. And I immediately jumped out of the car, and she went and parked, and I found it sitting up on a bush, which I honestly didn't expect. But it was a male, and I found him just sitting up like that. It was right next to the road, and then a car drove by and it flushed and landed like 15 feet in front of me.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Directly in front
That's
of me.
That's amazing.
And it was just watching me. And so I ended up getting some photos that I'm really, really happy with. And,
you know, it's no
got
like.
Got to just watch its bright pink gorget or gorget. Gorget. There's too many ways to say that.
Whatever that's called.
Gorget.
Gorget.
That sounds French. Right. All right. They have this beautiful pink gorget that I only now learned to say.
I don't like that. Yeah. I feel like
it seems, yeah, it seems too westernized.
Merca.
Oh, yeah. And then we had a beautiful male black-headed grosbeak up there as well, which, I mean, it's just one of the prettiest grosbeaks in the States. It's just so
rose-breasted
unique.
Rose-breasted or black-headed?
I think rose-breasted still takes it whenever you compare
Absolutely.
Them side by
yep,
side.
Thank you.
But
smart man.
I think black-headed is definitely second.
No.
You think blue? Or
evening.
What? Okay. Evening is a stunner.
Is number one.
Number one. Okay. Yeah. I've never seen one. I don't have that in-person experience.
I
with
also
them.
Have seen them when I'm like cold and it's like early yeah. morning and like, I don't know. Evenings are amazing.
Yep.
They have a really cool call, too.
Yeah, they do. I like the evening calls. I would love to find one of those guys in the state. That would be fun.
I have.
I don't have.
I've seen them twice in the state. Twice.
Feeders,
and then I had two flyovers during photography class in Baylor, because I was outside. But, yeah, that was during that 2020-2021 eruption year.
Yeah. I definitely could have got on that train, but
this
I
was like,
did not know about that.
It was, you know, it was a general low time of my life, freshman year, but I got some great birds. Yeah, that evening grosbeak, it's fantastic.
That'll lift your spirits, for sure. But yeah, and Oh, I need to explain this peregrine falcon photo. So there was at one point that we were visiting a feeder, and they had these, they had trail cameras set up watching the feeder just so that they could see if the flock was still coming to the mm-hmm. feeders, because they had these things all over the state. But
Pinion Jay feeders?
Yes, the Pinion Jay feeders. And so I was maybe 15 feet away from one of these feeders reviewing footage on my laptop, just sitting on a rock on the ground or something. Mm-hmm. And the Pinion Jay flock was already kind of around me. They just like were watching me, whatever. But then all of a sudden they start just freaking out, like seriously freaking out. Mm-hmm. And I thought Lizzie was coming back to the feeder. Like I thought she, I don't know, was just maybe making them more scared than normal for whatever reason.
Lizzie's a scary person.
I can't even joke about it. She's like the most harmless person to exist.
She's like the sweetest person ever.
But I'm kind of watching these jays and these pinion junipers just right next to me, just kind of going nuts and hopping around and just feeling super uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, I just hear, and it's this peregrine falcon hits one of the jays in flight, like literally 10 feet in front of me.
Holy.
Like, it didn't see me there at all. I was in like camouflage gear. I was not moving really. And so I imagine it didn't see me. It hit this bird, and the bird didn't die. And then I had my camera on me, so I whip up and take a photo of it after it had reascended. And then it saw me, and so this photo is it kind of looking at me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really crazy.
The sounds of it were just ridiculous.
A little bit brutal, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just, whenever it was making that ascent or whenever it hit that bird, it was just so loud. And I don't know, something I've never been that close to a raptor hunting, so that was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Especially the fastest animal in the world. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah. But to keep going, like, got some great views of a black-throated sparrow multiple times, but at
it's
one point
it's a sharp-looking sparrow.
Yeah.
Not quite a Lincoln sparrow.
Yeah. At one point, I actually found a nest, so that was cool to get close, and he was super comfy with me, so I got to take some photos. But
okay, now we're going to move on to the best bird of your trip.
Yeah, so as I'm leaving, we wrap up our technical work week, and my flight was Sunday, so we wanted to just kind of get me as many birds as I could, I guess, on Saturday. And so we decide that the best way to do that is to get high elevation. And so, as I'm sure many of the people listening have heard before, the town of Alta, just outside of Salt Lake City, is known for having these feeders at the town center that draw in some of the most desired birds of North America, honestly. So that's the case because this town of Alta is actually a like ski town, and it's sitting at, I think, 9,000 feet, which is way up there. And so it's known for getting the rosy finch species.
Is it all three? Or?
They don't have brown capped, but they do get black and gray crowned. And so I was super stoked to get to see those. I had hopes for Lewis's woodpecker potentially. But I did miss out on that one, so I'll be back chasing that guy.
Don't have that bird.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a trip we can do together.
Yeah, dude, Lewis's woodpecker would be worth it. That guy is crazy pretty. But
yeah.
But yeah, so we drive up the mountain and we park. It's, you know, there's feet of snow on the ground up there still, which is just crazy.
But yeah.
We park and immediately there's gray-crowned rosy finches just all over the trees. Like it was just as soon as you step out.
Those are beautiful birds.
Yeah, just stunning little finches. And then right after that, I see black rosy finch.
The best rosy finch.
Yes. I mean, it was absolutely the highlight bird of the trip for me.
It's so beautiful.
It's just so unique, and it's endangered, and its habits and breeding behaviors are just so unique that it's just one that you can't help but give it a lot of attention, a lot of credit. But
yeah, it's, and like, if you want to describe it, you can describe it. I could also.
Yeah, it's so it's finch sized. You know,
it is a finch.
Pretty average, yeah.
It's
but
like
it's
larger than a Cassin's or purple finch.
Slightly, yeah, slightly. It's like a really hefty house finch in shape and size, because they don't have
just a little shorter tail, longer winged.
Yeah, well, they don't have the head structure or anything for a Cassin's, but
yeah. I don't know. They're shaped like a rosy finch. If you've seen a rosy finch, that's what they're shaped like.
Yeah, but they're black, like truly black, with a gray, way more silver than gray, just a true silver crown. It doesn't necessarily connect on the top, so I guess it's more of an eye line, but whatever.
Whatever it is.
And hot pink wings, which is just ridiculous, but the black contrasting with the hot pink and the silver, it just makes it one that I'll never forget. It was truly an incredible bird. And we did get Clark's Nutcracker up there as well.
No, this is the best rosy finch place in the world. Sandia Crest in New Mexico, outside of Albuquerque. Flock,
does it have all three?
Yeah, this flock has all three. I don't think I have any pictures with all three, but I think right here we have a brown capped. So
that's incredible.
And yeah, that was an amazing experience.
Yeah,
but anyways,
yeah, to see all three would be great, but I think the brown cap can wait, because it's
the worst,
probably. I don't want to say it's the worst, but it's definitely the least visibly appealing of the three.
Yeah. Brown capped has a tiny range, but
those breeding pockets, at least for the black rosy finch on that map, were generous. I don't know much about rosy finches at all, but from what I learned while out there, the black rosy finch only nests above the tree line.
And I think that's all rosy finches.
I don't know. I don't know that gray crown do, but yeah. Anyways, it was really an incredible bird, and something that I was super satisfied to get good views of.
Yeah, that's one of the best birds in the U.S. in my personal opinion.
I agree, 100%. I don't think there's much that can make that a question. But
I would like to point out that I think your best lifer of this entire trip was black-capped chickadee.
Yeah, so that's one that you can pretty easily get in Tennessee if you go to the right places, but I unfortunately have not been to the right places and gotten them, so
we'll get you there.
Yeah,
we'll get you there.
I definitely have some targets still in the state, but got whenever we went down the mountain, we got Plumbus vireo and black-capped chickadee as a couple more lifers. So that was fun. Oh, I guess one more thing. So Saturday night we camped on Antelope Island, which is a massive landmass. It's a state park in the middle of the Great Salt Lake. So it's pretty unique habitat, and we knew that it was maybe the best place in North America actually for chuckers, and also a fantastic place for burrowing owl. So we, Lizzie and I, ended up going out there and camping, hoping for both of those, and ended up getting them. But while we were camping, she later told me that when she was in her tent, that she thought a bison sat on her in the middle of the night. And
what?
And I totally understand because I also thought that I was being trampled by bison. There were 50 or 60 mile an hour sustained winds in the middle of the night.
Holy crap.
Which I don't know if anyone's experienced that in a tent, but it's a different experience than being outside of a tent. It was ridiculous. It was absolutely wild.
Did you sleep at all?
No, I mean, not really. So we ended up having to panic and had to quickly think about what to do. And we just packed up all of our gear, all of our stuff, and just threw it in the car. And then I just tried to sleep sitting straight up in the front seat.
Were you in the little Kona?
Yeah, we were. So it was.
And it's packed full of gear, so you can't do anything. Yep.
Yeah, there was already, you know, everything that we owned in there, so that was great. Before my big day of travel, got maybe an hour of sleep. But I
know that feeling.
Yeah. but I did get both Chucker and Burrowing Owl, so that was
right.
It was definitely a good story to tell at some point. it was fun. And so that next day just headed on out. But yeah, that was a pretty great time, and I don't know, I think the grouse, Lex, and the feeders at Alta were probably my favorite moments of the trip. I don't think there's much to beat.
Grouse,
that.
Lex are fantastic, and rosy finches are amazing. Yeah. So that sounds like an amazing trip.
Yeah, it was great. Do you have any questions about anything Utah or anything out west before we skedaddle?
What was your favorite bird? I guess black rosy finch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which grouse display was your favorite of the two?
I wish we had gotten to see the greater sage grouse lick.
Oh, you
closer.
Didn't get to see it? Closer.
Yeah, gotcha. We did get to see it, but it was from pretty dang far away. And I think if we had gotten to see that closer and really experienced that better, then that would be my favorite, but the sharp-tailed grouse we were maybe 40 yards away from, 50 yards away, so it was good scope views, and I don't know, the sounds of that were much crisper, and like the scene was just absolutely stunning. I think the sharp-tailed grouse was definitely my favorite to watch and listen to. I think the sounds of it were absolutely as phenomenal as the sight. But yeah, so that was... Yeah, that was my trip to Utah.
Yeah, sounds amazing, man.
Yeah, it really was great.
Stoked.
It was fantastic.
First trip out west. Yeah. Now we need to do one.
For first of many. Now that I see it, I got to get out there again.
Yeah. I need to get you international.
It was wonderful. Yeah, I would love to do a birding trip. Maybe one day we can get my Panama trip going.
Yeah, or wherever, you know.
Yeah, anywhere. Let's see what we got
in the
books. But yeah. We can sign out now.
Yeah. Been Back to Birding with Luke and
Patrick. Yep.
We'll see y'all next time. Thanks for listening.
Alrighty.